This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another episode of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I'm your co-host, JT. With me, as always, is good old Will from Texas. Will, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I always do this, man. I always start talking and then realize I have the mute button pushed on my speakers.
And it's been a long time. It's been a while, is it? One group weren't saying since we've last spoken, and it's been about a month. How's your month been?
It's been all right, man. Even though we didn't do a Dangerous Alliance, we did do the show with Ben Morris, and so hopefully people got a chance to check that out, talking about Halloween Havoc 1990. So, you know, yeah, it's been a month since we've done the Dangerous Alliance, but the 90 show was fun as well.
Yes, it was. So be sure to check that out. It's on the Place to Be podcast feed under PTV and Rewind. It's the one for October. With me, you, Ben, and our producer here, Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good, good. And it was the four of us talked, like you said, Halloween Havoc 90. So be sure to check that out. Kind of ran in place of the missing Dangerous Alliance show as I was on vacation. Will had a lot going on. And Dan, found a little love maybe, Will. A little love connection.
What?
Up in Central Mass.
So him and his dog finally just... Oh, I'm sorry. What was the
dog's
name?
I'm not in Texas, Will. I'm.
Whoa! That's Arkansas, buddy. Get it right.
No, it's been wild. Just crazy doing some career searching, but also looking for some love as well, as always, as anybody who's documented my time here on the Place to Be Nation. And it's just been a little wild, and really looking forward to the holidays. In fact, guys, you guys say we were gone for a month, but I was listening to every one of our shows every day since our last one. So really, it's like we never left.
There you go. And Dan is like our Dawson, you know, from Dawson's Creek, just waiting for him to find that love finally. Cash in. So we're hoping you make it, Dan. The whole Place to Be Nation is rooting for you on this one. So we'll see.
Oh, God bless you.
This will be your – was it Jen that Dawson finally lost? It? Anyway. All right. So
I didn't watch that. I was too old for that. I was see, you're the Dawson's Creek era, man. I am the Beverly Hills 90210, the originals era.
And now, so. Will, I am a diehard 90210 fan. We're actually considering doing a little piece on that. We'll have to talk. I can hang with you day and night with 90210. I watched it religiously. Dawson's I watched in reruns. I was working nights. And like USA or TBS, some station had them on, and with like nothing to do with every morning from like 9 to 11, I'd watch them. So that's actually how I caught up on Dawson. But no, 90210 lifer here, so we got that in common. Maybe we'll do that as a game one time. 90210 game. Think of something.
Sure.
All right. Speaking of games, why don't we dive into our first fall? If you're new to the show, we have three different falls, 30 minutes apiece, and then we do some mail at the end. So Dan McGinn, what is fall number one?
All right, guys, we're going to play a little Living the Gimmick, and if you catch my drift, we're going to do a little wrestling, cutting, and strutting. We're doing Ed Leslie today.
All right, so full disclosure, Will sent me a text saying he wanted a WrestleCraft entry, and he picked Ed Leslie. So if you haven't heard this game before, it's we've done it, I think, a couple times before, right? We did John Tenta, and we've done Barry Darso. And basically, we take a guy that has had a ton of gimmicks in his career. I mean, a lot of gimmicks. So we go through all of them, and we discuss kind of how they ebbed and flowed to each, our memories of each one, and then we ranked them at the end from best to worst, or worst to best, however we want to do it. So, Will, this was your choice, and you're always good at leading us through the gimmicks of these men. So starting at the very beginning, why don't you kick us off with Ed Leslie's career?
Well, now here's the thing. When Ed Leslie started off, you know, he was Hulk Hogan's buddy, right? I mean, throughout most of his career, he wrestled as Ed Boulder, as Dizzy Hogan, and I wonder if did he ever just wrestle as Ed Leslie? I don't know.
No, I think he started pretty much like you said, as Ed Boulder and then Dizzy Hogan.
Okay. Yeah, because Hulk Hogan wrestled as Terry Boulder.
Yep.
So, you know, so he would always like play Hogan's brother or cousin or best friend or whatever.
Love
which
it.
Is fine. But I didn't really watch any of that stuff. I've seen some of the matches, but for me, I first saw him as Brutus Beefcake, mm-hmm. right around, you know, when he was getting hot, when WrestleMania, the very first one started. And then shortly after that, you know, when he was teaming with Greg Valentine as the Dream Team. And here's the thing about Ed Leslie. When I was a kid, Brutus Beefcake didn't suck. You know, I'm not saying he didn't suck as a wrestler. I'm saying I didn't think of him as a shitty wrestler when I was a kid.
Oh, definitely
I
not.
Was cheering for Brutus Beefcake. I was booing him initially. Okay, I was, you know, oh, I hate that Brutus Beefcake. He thinks he's so good looking and, you know, he thinks he's the man, all this. But then, you know, when he helped Piper cut Adrian Adonis's hair to become Brutus the Barber Beefcake, mm-hmm. I was cheering him. Like, I was like, yeah, go for it, Beefcake, right? I mean, I was kind of legitimately happy. But for me, Brutus Beefcake will always be kind of that cocky guy with the long-sleeved, you know, like the leopard print and zebra print sleeves with the little cut-off finger gloves. And I don't know, man. I kind of like that era of Brutus Beefcake. I don't really like, you know, some of the stuff I've seen watching it back. But mm-hmm. at the time, man, I was invested. And I one of my favorite matches was the Bulldogs versus the Dream Team from WrestleMania 2. And my sister, she was working for a company and she had to go train in Sacramento. And when she was in Sacramento that year, 1986, she actually got to see a house show that was headlined by the Bulldogs and the Dream Team in a steel cage match.
Oh,
and
wow.
it was a bloody match because she took tons of pictures, and somewhere in my attic, there is a box with pictures of the Dream Team versus Brutus, or I'm sorry, versus the British Bulldogs. And then, like I said, you know, we're not even into the Barber era. We're just into that Dream Team era right now.
What do you think they came up with the name for Dizzy Hogan? I mean, is it like Dizzy Gillespie? I mean, where did they get, like, why did they think that would be like a good name? I mean,
I have no
Dizzy
idea.
Dean? He was earlier than that as a pitcher.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, where did they get, I mean, was Dizzy a hot name in the 70s? It's an odd name. It's, you know, Hulk and Dizzy Hogan. I don't know. You'd think they'd come up with anything better.
I know a little bit about 70s pop culture, man. I don't know any other Dizzy moniker from that time period, you know, that would make it relevant. You know, Dizzy Gillespie, Christ, he was doing jazz in the 20s,
right?
You know, so I have no idea.
It's an odd choice. I mean, oh, this big jacked up, you know, roided up wrestler, what's his name, Dizzy. It's not like you know you'd expect Dizzy to be like a goof, like Benny Hill or something, you know. Like, that's Dizzy to me, like, kind of, you know, goofing around and clowning around, like a clown be Dizzy. But like Dizzy the Clown would work, but Dizzy Hogan, when you're supposed to be like this jacked up guy with Hulk and Dizzy, this is an odd name. It kind of set the tone for his career in many ways that he'd go with that bizarre name. But yeah, the Brutus Beefcake. So I first discovered him in 1990 around WrestleMania 6. So the Barber was the first Beefcake intro I had. But we'll stick where we're at right now, and that's the mid 80s where he's the heel. And I've gone back to really appreciate his work mainly with the Dream Team, like you said. And you can see when things started to click for him. Because if you watch his pre-Dream Team stuff, I mean, he's as green as it can be. He lumbers through a lot of his matches. His match at WrestleMania 1 catches a lot of flack, and rewatching it recently, it's not as bad as maybe you may remember, but it's not good. But once he gets paired up with Greg Valentine and Johnny Valiant, and they start traveling the country, working together night in and night out, he showed that he was, you know, adept enough to learn. He was adept enough, as long as you say, that he could adapt in the ring and he definitely soaked up whatever Valentine was teaching him, because he definitely improved during that run. And they did a good job where he would go in for spurts, land some offense, and let Valentine do the heavy lifting. And by the end of their run, they were quite good as a unit. And their match at WrestleMania 2, like you said, was a classic. And some of the stuff later, like I'm sure that cage match, but even like they had a match on Saturday's main event later in 86 that was really good. So it was good to see Beefcake really kind of get things going.
Well, when Greg when Greg Valentine's your partner, I mean, you have to be really bad to screw it up. Yep. So, you know, I mean, it kind of just goes to show why Honky Tonk Man was never a very good wrestler when, you know, he couldn't make a tag team with Greg Valentine work.
And
you know,
to credit Beefcake, he carried his own in a lot of those matches too. Like he wasn't camping out and letting Valentine do everything. If you watch, I mean, his timing is pretty good. They would do the double team stuff pretty well. Yep. He was definitely learning and putting it into practice.
Had the really nasty hammerlock elevated lift and
yes.
into like a slam, you know, where he'd slam the arm down. I always loved that, which is in that WrestleMania 2 tag.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just looking at Beefcake the way I looked at him as a kid. You know, when I was 12 years old, 10 years old, I actually enjoyed watching him on TV. Like, mm-hmm. he felt like a real star. And this was all pre-Barber.
Right.
You know? So I actually felt that he carried himself like a star in this period, this 85 to 87 period.
And he had the look to go with it. And you know, Valiant being able to talk for him helped a lot, too, because Valentine, sure. great in the ring, not a talker. So I thought, you know, Luscious Johnny was a good choice as a voice for them. And then they were really his only team. Oh, you know, he didn't really manage anyone else during this period, so it kind of made them seem even more special. You know, like all the other managers had stables, and Johnny V really just focused on the Dream Team, so it almost made them stand out in that regard too. Like,
sure.
you know, this you know legendary wrestler is managing just this; these are his chosen guys. You know,
well, and if you look, man, I'm sure Vince McMahon saw dollar signs in Beefcake,
right?
You know, they're just probably like the prototypical Vince McMahon guy there, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm sure he was just loving having Beefcake on his roster. So I don't really have anything negative to say
mm-hmm.
at this point, only because not because, you know, he was a great wrestler, just because when I look at this time period, I'm looking through, like I said, the eyes of a 10-year-old, of an 11-year-old, not of a 40-year-old bitter wrestling fan. And I think one of the reasons that I don't have that bitterness is because he was in some of my favorite angles. You know? And I guess that's when we could move to the Barber with the Roddy Piper thing, where first him and Valentine, was it him and Valentine, right? They lose against the Rougeaus at WrestleMania 3?
Yes, yep.
And then Johnny V and Valentine turn on Beefcake.
Actually, they beat the Rougeaus at that show. They actually won the match, and then they argued after still.
Oh, okay, because there was like a noggin knocker or right. something right yep. there. Okay, sure. All right. So either way, though, he gets beaten down, okay? And so you think, oh, okay, poor Brutus Beefcake. But I think he was getting cheers even before then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then he comes out to help Piper shave, or, you know, actually a really bad haircut job on Adonis.
Yeah.
But man, after that I was sold. And after that
and that was revenge too, because remember Adonis had shaved his head in that six man by accident when he was like not looking in the corner.
That's right.
Beefcake. Yep. So that's why he came out there. Yeah. Go ahead.
At the time, JR, I really thought that we were gonna get tons of hair versus hair matches. I really thought that this would like lead to Beefcake, you know, putting up his hair every 2 months, 3 months on a Saturday night's main event or a pay-per-view, and we would get all these epic hair versus hair matches. Now, that didn't really happen, but it's nice to dream. So I don't know. What's your thoughts? I mean, you came in right when he was the Barber. So what's your thoughts on Brutus the Barber?
Yeah, so I started watching early in 90, and full disclosure, he was my first big-time favorite wrestler. Like, something about him clicked. So I had one friend that was a big Hogan fan and another one that was a big Savage fan. And I liked Savage immediately as well, but Beefcake was my guy. I even have a Brutus Beefcake puzzle that I used to put together over and over while watching wrestling. So he was my first real favorite. and loved the match at WrestleMania 6 where he ends perfect streak, and then I kind of went back and, you know, rebuilt through his 89 as I got to kind of, you know, better appreciate him as a wrestler, and then was heartbroken when his face got destroyed on July 4th because I was so into SummerSlam 90. It was, you know, the first pay-per-view I was really a fan for, and I was so into the build for all of it, and I was so hyped that he was going to fight perfect for the title, and this was his big moment. He was going to be IC champ. Here's my guy. And then he gets his face destroyed, gets pulled from the match, and it got weird because you just stopped hearing about him. Like, they gave, like, no updates. Like, the updates just disappeared. So I would just, like, wait for updates on Brutus Beefcake to come back, and I didn't have, you know, dirt sheets in my world at that time. There was no hotline.
Yeah, I know,
like,
that.
Nothing. You know, I was just in the dark. Like, where is Brutus Beefcake? I don't know if I was even getting, like, PWI yet. I might have just been on the verge, but I remember at one point, WWF Magazine had, like, a picture of him, like, in an autograph signing, and he had, like, a mustache, and he was all thin, and I'm like, oh, my God, Brutus Beefcake update. And then he finally returned in 91 to do the barbershop. So we can get to that in a moment. But he kind of had a weird first stretch as a barber. He had the feud with Honky and doesn't win the title at WrestleMania 4. Kind of seemed like he should have there. And his 88 almost mirrors his 90 because he was supposed to beat Honky at SummerSlam, and then they kind of did the audible and pulled him out. They had Ron Bass gash his face up, and they had Warrior take the title. And then it took him a while to kind of get going again. And then they decided they're going to start pushing him because he starts being friends with Hogan on air. And they fight Zeus and Savage at SummerSlam, and then they transition Savage from Hogan to Beefcake. So he had a pretty strong back end of 89. And if you watch, like, Survivor Series, where he's on Dusty Rhodes' team, he's presented as kind of like a top guy, and then he has a no-holds-barred cage match. So 89 to 90, you could tell they're really accelerating his push. Do you think if he didn't get hurt, Will, like, what was his ceiling in that stretch of 90 into 91? Does he IC champ going into Mania 7? Is he eventually turn heel? Did they do the feud with Hogan like they did in WCW later? Like, what do you think was his peak if he doesn't get hurt? Because he was improving.
It's really hard because I don't think he was over enough to warrant, like, world title contention. You know what I mean? He was over, but he wasn't world champion over.
Right.
And he wasn't a heel, so he was a face. So he wasn't like iconic like Randy Savage. Even people never watched wrestling knew who Randy Savage was in the 80s because mm-hmm. of that, you know, oh yeah, and the voice and the costumes and whatnot. And Randy Savage was just, you know, a special one of a kind talent. So I don't think he ever gets that level, but I do think he's probably a multi-time intercontinental champion. You know, maybe not even just with the accident, just if things worked out differently, if Honky Tonk Man didn't hold up for more money and hold the belt hostage, or if they do give DiBiase the title at WrestleMania 4 or whatever, you know, just different things. I think he probably would have made the intercontinental level. And then instead of just kind of fading away like he did, I think he might have been treated with more reverence. And then he might have been like one of the guest announcers on Raw or something. I don't know. I don't know his drug problems either. Right. I know, like, he's had those, but well, they obviously either Hogan's stroke was so strong that, you know, him having Beefcake as his partner in these huge tag team main events, or the office thought highly enough of him that he could be put in that position and nobody's going to blink an eye.
Probably both, because if you watch, you know, late 89 to 90, he feels like a big deal, and he's getting, like, big-time chairs. Like, when he beats Perfect at WrestleMania 6, like, the place goes crazy. I'm curious, you know, Hogan leaves, but I'm curious if Beefcake hangs around. I mean, maybe he gets into it. Maybe he doesn't hold the title, but I could see him, like, with a mini-feud with, like, Ric Flair in 92 or something like that. Like, when the roster thins out later and he's kind of maybe the star power hanging on in 91 and 92 into 93... Like, what could have been? Because when he comes back in 93 from the face injury, I guess we could talk about that now. So he does the barbershop run, disappears a bit, and then he comes back in early 93 to wrestle again with the mask on because it was, you know, all the plates in his face, and he's immediately repushed again. And I think this time, is a direct result of Hogan and Vince being desperate for star power, right? So he immediately shuffles Beefcake into the forefront as a way to get Hogan back, and they fight Money Inc. at WrestleMania 9. And you could tell the magic and the in-ring ability from Beefcake just, like, disappeared over that 2.5 years when he got hurt.
So, and I don't know, because, like, I wasn't online when the internet first came of age. I didn't keep up with the dirt. Hell, half the stuff you were just talking about, I wasn't even watching wrestling. Did Beefcake get his reputation as a horrible worker at WWF or when he went to WCW?
I think it, and I wasn't too, you know, a big sheet guy at this point either. Maybe we got to get Zellner and Bix to do March of 93 between the sheets. I don't think, because, I mean, I was super excited when he came back, and he only had a couple of matches in 93. Like, he fought DiBiase on Raw, and you can kind of chalk that up like, all right, this guy hasn't wrestled in 2.5 years, so it's not going to be great. WrestleMania 9, that match kind of sucked. And then, I mean, he did it like house show stuff against the Beverly Brothers and Money Inc., but I don't think he wrestles again for the WWF on TV after those two matches. So I don't think he got too much of a rep as being crappy, but you could tell it just wasn't the same. And you could write it off, though. You could say, well, he's protecting the face. He's rusty. They're not giving him a lot of work. So you could kind of write it off.
And like I said, we don't know the drug issue at this point either. Right. Like when those took hold, you know, because drugs have ruined a lot of great wrestling careers, you know.
And one of the best moments, he comes back on Raw and he gives this heartfelt speech. And we covered this on our Raw Live Watch last year sometime. And he's giving this long speech about his mother died and his wife left him and took the dog. You know, he's like going through the whole thing. I'm bankrupt. And you just hear this one guy in the Manhattan Center, clear as day, kill yourself! Yells out for the crowd. It was like, holy
shit.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. I was like, oh, my God. It was a long promo. The crowd kind of turned on him. But that was a tough setting to do that in. You kind of marketing Raw as like a...
It's hilarious for all the wrong reasons.
And you're marketing Raw as like a hardcore show, you know, in front of these fans, New York City fans, live. And to do a promo like that was probably better suited for like the canned audience of superstars. But regardless, so his Dirty F run ends with a thud because Hogan loses the King of the Ring and you just never see Beefcake. He's just gone. And we don't see him until WCW.
And then, well, let's get into these WCW gimmicks because... He comes in, right? Initially, did he come in as a friend of Hogan's, or did he automatically start with the Dungeon?
So he came in as a friend of Hogan, but I don't think he didn't really wrestle at all. He was just kind of in the background all the time, and like he would like reference him as Brother Brudai. Like he's there, I think, when he wins at Bash of the Beach, and he's kind of just with him on and off, and it looks almost like an entourage kind of thing. So he's just there.
Okay.
So he doesn't wrestle at all until he turns on him. As the Butcher. Remember, they did the whole thing with the Masked Man, and then it ended up being him, I think, at Halloween Havoc, is when they unmask him. And Bobby Heenan does the awful, like, he just butchered a friendship! You know, like, banging home the name immediately. And that's when Tenta debuted as Avalanche and Faces of Fear fired up. And then he pretty much goes right into main eventing with Hogan at Starrcade from there.
Now, let me ask you this honest question.
Yeah.
Which Faces of Fear do you prefer? The Butcher, Kevin Sullivan, and Avalanche? Or Barbarian and Haku.
It is not even not even a match. Faces of Fear. Barbarian and Haku.
When we did this gimmick the last time with Barry Darso, you were really passionate about defending horrible wrestlers, so I just had to make sure.
Yes, no. Ming and Barbarians, even back to the WWF days, one of my favorite all-time teams. I mean, the match at 7 is awesome with the Rockers, and then they pick up right where they live off in WCW. So, yes, not even a question there.
Yeah, I'm just teasing you, man. So anyway, after he's the Butcher, he becomes the Man with No Man, with no name. I don't even remember this Man with No Name gimmick. What happened?
So it was brief. He's the Butcher, and then... after he loses to Hogan, they start battling, and then they kind of start to split up. Sullivan, and I think it's at Super Brawl when Sullivan slams. He uses Beefcake as a weapon and like spikes someone into Beefcake's face, and he like runs off holding his face because they're playing up the restructured face. And then he ended up becoming the man. I think he was like the Man with No Face for like a week, and then he was the Man with No Name. I don't know. Wikipedia said he became amnesiac, so I'm guessing maybe that bang in the head knocked him out. But I think it was very brief that he was the Man with No Name, because I think it was that he had betrayed Hogan and then he had been turned on by Sullivan. So he's like a man without a country kind of thing. I think that was the idea behind it.
What I don't understand is after this point, he becomes the Zodiac, right?
Yes.
Why did they keep changing his name? I mean, we're doing this not because of his WWF run. We're doing this show almost entirely because of all these WCW gimmicks. I mean, the butcher, I guess you couldn't say you were the barber, so I get the butcher, you know. Although coming down to the ring with a butcher knife or something would have been a great gimmick.
Well, he was so bland. Like, I rewatched, and I rewatched the 94s, but then I've been watching them all, even into 95, and he's the butcher. And if you watch Darkie, he comes down, he's got white tights and, like, sunglasses. And, like, that is literally it. Like, I mean, this is nothing about him. He's, like, as generic as can be. And this is a guy who had a lot of charisma and pizzazz as the beef, you know, as the beefer, as Brutus Beefcake. And then he's just, like, the most generic indie-level heel-looking heel at the biggest show of the year against Hulk Hogan. And he's just got, like, nothing about him. And I think they kept switching because nothing was clicking. I mean, they couldn't recapture what he had as the barber. And now you're kind of like, okay, what do we do with this guy? The butcher.
But they're not doing him any favors.
Oh, not at all. No.
I mean, even the butcher, it's not like he came like in a butcher's frock, like,
exactly,
that had,
yeah,
bloody meat all over it or something. Or
right. It was weird. Like, they should have just made him like a serial killer, the butcher. it was an odd.
Right.
He's this dude, right, does nothing. And then he becomes the Zodiac because they were just trying to build up the Dungeon of Doom. So they had him just rejoin Sullivan, and he's got the black and white face paint, and remember, just get yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and
see, even the Zodiac gimmick, like, has, like, the name has nothing to do with the way he played it.
Right.
It doesn't. It baffles the mind. Like, if we were grading these WCW gimmicks, these early ones, they'd all get an F, not just for failure, but just because they made no sense and he didn't play to any of these gimmicks.
No, I agree. And the Zodiac, I mean, they could have went multiple ways, but he just had the yin and the yang painted on his face. And then, like I said, walked around saying yes, no, which made no sense.
Yeah, what does that have to do with the Zodiac? That's what I don't understand.
I guess, well, the yin yang and the yes, no, I guess, made sense. But I don't know why his name was the Zodiac. that made no sense. Like, they should call him yin yang,
right,
or something. If that's what they, or the man who can't decide. So then he eventually leaves the dungeon, and they retcon the whole thing, and they say that he was a mole from Hogan. That he was sent into the Dungeon of Doom to destroy it from the inside. I mean, I don't know if we ever really, that happens, if he's a major force of destroying the Dungeon of Doom, but that's how they really played it up.
I think the shitty matches might have done that, man. Because, God, we watched that stuff, and those matches sucked, bro.
Oh, yeah, awful.
So then after the Zodiac, he becomes the Booty Man. Okay, I have no problem with the Booty Man as, like, kind of like a rich rapper gimmick or something, you know?
Yes.
But, you know, maybe like the 1999 version of the Godfather, you know, WCW's Godfather version or something.
Right, or like Biggie is doing now with the booty, you know?
Yeah, something. But my God, this was a man who was infatuated with his own butt,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep.
Had nothing to do with, like, hey, I'm a playboy, I get a lot of tail. No, check me out. I don't know, man.
And it's such a dumb name, the Booty Man. Like, if that was his nickname, you know, like, Brother Booty Man Brutai, or whatever, you know, however they want to add the Booty Man Leslie, whatever they wanted to say, just the Booty Man. And again, no distinct look. He had white pants and tassels and, like, nothing else. And his move was the high knee, of course, high knee. And he danced, and it sucked because what they did was DDP was feuding with Johnny B. Badd for the TV title, and that's when Merrill left the company in early 96, and they just insert Booty Man into the feud, and that's why he ends up with Kimberly. So the whole thing is, like, stupid. It's just, it comes out of nowhere, and it kind of ruined, sidetracked, like, a pretty hot, you know, Johnny B. Badd DDP feud, and all of a sudden here's Booty,
right,
Man that no one gives a shit about. And it's like, then they got Kimberly, like, fawning over him. And I remember, I think it's Scott Keith who put in one of his reviews, like, just how unreal or how unbelievable it is that you have this juiced up, bloated, thinning hair, aging Beefcake, and this smoke show Kimberly is supposed to be, like, fawning over him.
Wait a minute. Look at who she married.
No, I know.
In real life.
But on presentation-wise, like, this is, I mean, if I'm the kayfabe, I don't know who she's married to, right? I'm just watching WCW, and I see this hot, hot girl, you know, trying to get with this jackass, so shaking his ass, obsessed with his ass, and he's got this thin, long mullet, and he's bloated from all the steroids. It just seemed real goofy. Like, it was just so unbelievable that Kimberly would want a guy like this. And I don't know, even DDP at least seemed cooler than Booty Man did. So I'll give her that.
I guess. I don't know. I always felt like DDP felt to me, remember how like in the early 90s, the Freebirds felt so out of date?
Mm-hmm.
DDP, even at the peak of like Monday Night Wars, always felt like that. Like he wasn't in on the joke.
But wasn't that, it almost felt like it was by design though, that that his gimmick was that he was just like this Jersey sleazebag from the 80s. I don't know. It kind of worked for me on that level that it felt like, all right, maybe by design, this is just who he is. Like Booty Man is, to me, doesn't relate on any level.
No, I agree. Absolutely. So why did he disappear between the Booty Man and the Disciple? Like, I mean, he had to have been getting paid, right? Because everyone else got paid in WCW.
Yeah, I think they realized that the Booty Man was stupid. And I think what happened, too, is that they were rapidly shifting gears. Like, I think it was around this time where Hall and Nash signed, and you feel a shift. Like, I'm just watching all these Nitros now, and you feel the shift slowly starting to seep in. And they start focusing more on the Cruiserweights, and they bring in the Luchadors, and the NWO stuff is starting in May, and... you know, the Horsemen kind of feuding with the Dungeon of Dooms. There wasn't a lot of room for him, and Hogan was gone. So Hogan left in, like, March off TV. So he really didn't have
Where
a
Where did
spot.
Hogan go?
He took a break. He was off from, I think it was late February, early March, and then he was supposed to come back and help WCW dethrone the NWO. And then he ends up obviously being the third man. But he was on like a...
Oh, that's right.
He was on a break.
And that's when Savage and Flair were having their little thing.
Right.
And were picking up business.
Yeah, with the money and the Mongo thing where Flair was hitting on Deborah to set up the Mongo
turn.
Kevin
Green. Yeah. Yeah.
So all that was going on. And Hogan, I mean, I think the idea that you always hear, the kind of the cynics that Hogan was on the sidelines hoping, you know, ratings would, you know, dwindle with him gone. Then he'd come back and save the day. And... didn't quite happen that way, but Beefcake does show up one time before being the Disciple in sometime, I think it was late 96, after Hogan won the title from the Giant. Beefcake comes out to celebrate with him.
I think it was at Road Wild, wasn't it?
Yeah, he beats Giant at Road Wild, then it was like Hogan's birthday, so they have like a celebration, and Beefcake comes out to celebrate with him, and they beat the crap out of him. And they also did the same thing to the Nasty Boys. They refused to let them in the NWO. And I remember one thing on Nitro where like Beefcake and the Nasties were like sitting outside the arena, like unsure what to do. And that was like the last time he was on, I think, until early 98 when he came back as a Disciple.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I liked Beefcake as the Disciple. You know, I hated the Warrior stuff. I hated Ultimate Warrior coming back and kind of ruining the Disciple for me. But I liked Beefcake as a Disciple. He looked like a scummy guy who belonged in the NWO at the time. I'm not saying the NWO wasn't bloated and had too many members and wasn't special. But I had no problem with Beefcake as a member of the NWO because he fit perfectly with that whole ex-WWF disgruntled star.
And he, for once, he had the look to back it up. Because what have we talked about all this time? You know, he was just a bland, stripped-down Brutus Beefcake. And for once now, he's got the, like you said, he's got the beard, he's got the sunglasses, the biker gear. Like, he looks, he has something going on. And the Disciple name made sense because, you know, he was a slave to Hogan all these years. So he was
Well, not only
disciple.
That, if you notice, at least if it felt that way to me, he was no longer kind of, I mean, you could tell he was juicing or whatever. Oh, yeah. But he wasn't bloated anymore. Like, he really cut down, you know, he really looked like in really good shape. I don't know. I thought I was kind of excited for the Disciple myself, you know, but this, once again, this is me not being on the internet, and this is already 1998 or whatever, completely into the WCW storylines. Now, by the end of the year, I'd be completely over WCW and want nothing to do with it. But at the time, man, I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. I you know, and like you
said, 1 minute to go, guys. 1 minute.
I had no problem with the way he looked. So anyway, I think Brutus Beefcake, a lot of potential in WWF, a lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, with the accident, the missed opportunities.
Oh, and we missed one other one I wanted
Which
to mention.
One?
When he was Furface, so the Mariner in 91, early 91, he came in. And, yeah, so this mysterious man with like a mask on, like a furry mask on Superstars, came out a couple times. He attacked Greg Valentine, I think Earthquake and Rick Martel maybe. And it was supposed to be Beefcake coming back with like a this big mask on to cover his face. Bravo and Earthquake. He ran in other matches, punched them a few times, threw a headbutt, and retreated. Never wrestled the match, was never given an official name. That was early in 91. before the barbershop.
But would you agree with me? Missed opportunities in WWF, complete failure in WCW.
Yeah, and the biggest, I mean, him getting hurt, I think is what really killed his career off. Because I really do think that he would have had a better run in 90 and 91. So I'm guessing we're out of time, Dan?
We are out of time, guys.
Okay, let's quickly rank. I think easily Beefcake number one. Would you say Barber or like the initial?
No, I'm going Dream Team Beefcake number one, Disciple number two, Barber
Disciple
three.
Over the Barber?
Well, yeah, just because I enjoyed it more, you know. I'm going completely as a fan back in the day, and then everything else complete failure, all at the bottom level.
Yeah, I'd put Barber one, Dream Team two, Disciple three, and then I guess Butcher, Zodiac, Booty. I hate Booty so much. And then Anthrax Dealer in the toll booth. Remember the whole thing? And he was working in one of the Boston toll booths, and he had left a bag of Coke, and they thought it was Anthrax.
That's awesome.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and take a break? That was a lot of fun. It flew by discussing the career of Ed Leslie. Maybe we can have him on to talk about it himself someday. So, all right, let's take a break.
We'll come back
with Fall. And illusion like a magician. He draws a rabbit out of hat, son. I draw more like a 44 Magnum. MC3, stop looking, listen, and try to imagine. It's traveling the speed of light, but everything's motion is frightening. Plus, I thought you were alone. You now enter dimension.
Personal consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. All right, we are back here, episode number 12 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. JT, Will, and Dan again. One falls in the books. We talked about the lengthy career of Brutus Beefcake at Leslie. We went through all his gimmicks. It was a fun conversation, Will. And whoever thought we'd talk so much about Brutus Beefcake with such loving memories of him.
Right? I bet people thought I was going to shit all over Beefcake the way I shit over Darso.
There you go. He ends up being one of your all-time favorites. It sounded to me like, I mean, he may be top five for you all time.
Maybe top 20.
Okay. All right, Dan, why don't you tell us what is game number two?
Put it in my mouth. She said, put it in her mouth. Mouth. Yeah. I mean, her motherfucking mouth. Mouth. She said, put it in her mouth. Mouth. Yeah. I mean, her motherfucking mouth. Mouth. She said, put it in her mouth.
Our second fall, we're just going to take a brief moment of sleaze.
Okay. Brief moment And this is the Sleaze Game. You might have heard this back on the old Kevin Kelly show. Well, I shouldn't say old. It's still running Kevin Kelly show. But Dan and I have played this game with him as well. And Will, I thought it'd be fun to kind of bring over to our show here. So many of you are probably aware of this point. I think it's at least a decade old by now. The old Death Valley Driver review message board, the DVR, had an epic Sleaze thread. It was a thread that kind of started off with, you know, old kind of rumors and stories of sleaziness from wrestlers of years gone by, and this thing exploded. I think it ended up being like 450 pages or something absurd. And I remember when I first discovered this thing, just spending hours at work just reading through it all, like jaw open. And which may not be the best best position considering some of the stories that we'll hear.
Yeah, you had your jaw open, all right.
But we so anyway, what I thought would be fun, like we did with Kevin, Will, is that Dan will throw out a story. And we'll debate it, we'll talk about it, and we'll levy percentage of truth or fiction. So Dan throws one out, we'll debate it, and then decide if it was like 70% true, 50% true, based on who's involved and what the story is. So Dan's got the site in front of him. It's also linked in the post if you didn't check it out on PlayStation.com. So if you want to read along with all the fun. Dan, why don't you get us started with the first entry?
All right, guys, we're going to go with this one here. Ranger Ross got put in jail because he freaked out and held up a bunch of cops hiding in the woods like Johnny Rambo. He's a legit Green Beret, and he evidently had one of those Vietnam flashbacks like Strawberry and Up in Smoke and decided he was going to take on the world. He held off the cops hiding in the woods for several days in full camouflage regalia and military-style arms and booby traps set up as well.
Hmm.
I don't know, man. Here's the thing, is that he was a legitimate airborne paratrooper. Okay? He was in the United States Army Rangers.
And there's been, like, vague references on Between the Sheets and other shows about, like, Ranger Ross going crazy before he came back. And I believe he ended up, like, turning his life around. Isn't he, like, a motivational speaker or something now?
Or a preacher or something. Yeah.
So I want to say like something like this maybe happened, but I feel like it's not as like overblown as it, like the booby traps and the hunting through the, it's not like the rundown, you know, with the Rock. I feel like he probably would have ended up dead if that was
blowing up gas stations in the middle of the mountains.
Right. Like, I feel like he probably would be dead if that was the case. So I want to say maybe like he went crazy and was like hiding or something from feds. I don't know, but I don't think it went to like this level where he beat the shit out of guys and then was like blowing up, you know, Jeeps and stuff like that.
Here's the problem. If his name was Juventud Guerrero, I'd believe it.
100%.
But he's not Juventud Guerrero. So, you know, and I don't know what kind of drugs, you know, he would be freaking out on. But like those late 90s, early 1000s drugs,
yes.
I definitely believe he could get, you know, some kind of freak out. But not back then. Not back in the day.
Yeah. I'll put this at like 36%, because I want to say there's just enough, like something like this may have happened, so I believe it's somewhat true, but it's just way over exaggerated.
I'm only going to put it at 5%, only in this sense that, and here's why, because I think it could have happened, I just don't think it was Ranger Ross that it happened to.
Okay, so maybe Hoovy was Ranger Ross. He was crazy. All right, Dan, what's the next? Oh, Dan, what do you think? What's your percentage?
It's really detailed. I want to say that this is, you know, this is pretty legit. If you had this many details involved,
I mean, no one's ever made stuff up on the internet. No one's ever,
never.
No one's ever written Ranger Ross fan fiction. All right, so you sound like you buy it then.
I buy it. I buy it. Why not?
Okay.
I'm going to say that Dan is racist, and the only reason he buys it is because Ranger Ross is black.
I'm going to say it's because Dan wants to live out a fantasy of being Ranger Ross.
Guys, more on black guys in a few more of these. Hold on just a moment. That's a tease for you. The next one is, at the beginning of the Attitude Era, when Vince was going nuts on merchandise ideas, one of his pet concepts was for the WWF Legends commemorative cock rings, which would have been available in adult specialty stores like Spencer's Gifts.
All right, so this is the Attitude Era, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, beginning of the Attitude Era.
I'm going to say this is 100% true. I think it's 100% accurate that Vince McMahon at some point on some kind of coke binge at his pool thought, you know, he's putting his own cock ring on and he's like, ah, you know what I need? I need a Rock cock ring. You know, like I could definitely see him saying that. And then like throwing the idea out there and just getting shot down. Like 100%, 150% true.
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say 150% false. Because if you're going to make money, you're not going to make money on a fringe product like a cock ring. You're going to go full condoms. You know, you're going to go full vibrators or dildos. You're not doing cock rings.
Didn't they have condoms, or am I making that up? I feel like there were wrestling WWF condoms in the Attitude Era.
I feel like I'm dirty and need to clean myself after having this discussion.
Where are my Godwin's anal beads?
Oh God. Yeah, I don't think I'd be purchasing the Godwin anal beads.
There you go, Dan. First Christmas gift with the new girl.
I don't know. What do you think? What do you think, Dan? I think it's complete bullshit. JR thinks it's absolutely true.
Oh, it's so true. He probably has one at home, custom made.
I just love the fact that you said rock cock ring without even like hesitation, like as if you have one yourself. But no, I don't think this is true at all.
Where's my test dildo?
Oh, God. Should I go on to the next one, or do you guys want to investigate this even further? Okay.
It definitely happened. He's got it. It's on his dresser.
Right there. The rock cock ring. Medusa maxed out Eddie Gilbert's credit cards.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Medusa. Were they together? Well, I didn't know they were together. I knew Missy Hyatt was.
I have no idea. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, I'm going to say 100%. And it has nothing to do with who's involved. It's just... Any, you know, if you tell me a woman maxed out the guy's credit card, I'd buy it.
Absolutely. That is, has nothing to do. You could have said
anyone.
Generic woman maxes out credit card of generic guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, yep, that would happen.
El Generico, you could say. Maybe exactly. That's how she bought the monster truck. She maxed out Eddie Gilbert's credit cards. Isn't she a monster truck driver now?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
There you go.
She's talked about it at the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Many years ago, Jerry Lawler and Dick Slater were riding through together and stopped at a restaurant to eat. Slater left a $20 tip, and she commented that it was such a big tip. And Slater said, quote, "Miss, I'm from Texas, and it's true what they say. Everything is bigger in Texas." And then stuck his thumbs in his pockets and his hands hanging near his crotch. She looked for a second and then blushed profusely. Oh, by the way, she was just 18 or 19 at the time.
This is your wheelhouse, Will. Your guys.
Well, here's the thing, man. Like, there are certain people that you know have big cocks, like Robert Fuller, Eric Embry. I've never heard that about Dick Slater, even though his name was Dick. Okay? So, I'm going to go 50-50 on this one. Only because I don't believe that a wrestler is going to leave a $20 tip.
Not even Dirty Dick?
Nope.
We know Lawler's not leaving a $20 tip. Lawler probably.
Well, Lawler was sober, so. Yeah.
Well, I thought the story was going to be that he took the tip, that Lawler stole the money. That's where I thought we were going with this one.
Oh, man.
No? Is he known for being thrifty?
Yeah, okay, so what's your take?
We can dispute the amount of the tip, but it wouldn't shock me at all that Dirty Dick Slater said that to a young waitress. That would not surprise me that he pointed to his crotch and teased that he had a big penis. So even if he didn't, I would say that. So I'll question the amount of the tip, but I will say it's like 80% true that he said that to a waitress at some point.
Yeah, I'll just go 50-50 just because, you know, he's not somebody that is spoken up. Like, was he in Missy Hyatt's book? Because she usually gets off on that kind of thing.
I've never read Missy Hyatt's book. I'm not sure.
Dan?
I kind of agree. I don't know about $20 tip, but certainly anything involving Jerry Lawler and 18, 19-year-olds, and I'm sure Dick Slater was all the more encouraging. Yeah, I could believe this happened.
Now, wasn't Dick Slater the one who got Dark Journey into wrestling?
I believe so, yep.
And she ended up screwing him over and becoming a whore and... getting addicted to crack and everything else. So, yeah. I mean, I guess, man. I don't know. I'm going to go 50-50.
Well, keeping with the theme of sex toys, guys, Jake Roberts was pro...
Kevin Kelly dental dam.
Jake Roberts was pro to traveling with a big pink dildo in his gear bag for himself.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds true. A guy was heavily on drugs and alcohol, and not that you have to be to enjoy something like that, but it seems like something he would do based on the tales you hear of him and even the stuff he talked about, you know, beyond the mat in his own documentary. Seems like he was pretty much up for whatever when it came to the bedroom. So I would say yes. I'm going to put that at 87%.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. You figure, you know, if you're that fucked up, right? Having a big pink dildo is like the least of your problems, right?
Yep.
Okay. I wonder if he was able to smuggle it into Mexico when he was working for AAA for like a 6-month period.
Yes. You know? Definitely possible.
Yeah, I'm going to go 90%.
I wonder if he thought it was the snake and just didn't know any better.
The pink snake? Really?
Maybe.
Maybe if it was a slimy green snake, but a pink one.
Yeah. Anyway, Terry Funk got caught banging Terry Reynolds by his wife.
Oh man.
So we'd have a year on this, huh? I'm trying to think of when they would have crossed paths.
94.
Was she was still in WCW in 94?
Well, she was with Dustin Rhodes, and Terry Funk and Dustin were in the same company.
Yeah, that had to be it. Either that or I was thinking 98.
Late 97, early 98. Yeah.
I find it hard to believe Terry would be sleeping with 90-year-old Terry Funk in 1998.
Dude, wait. Well, come on. New Jack? Really?
Yeah, but I could see New Jack. Like, there's reasons why she'd probably want to hook up with New Jack. I mean, I just don't know if... I don't know. Old man Terry Funk, like, what's he got going on in 1998?
Maybe he was a Southern charmer, man.
Well, I can't do it like Scott can, but you know,
hey,
know,
well, what did Dick Slater say, man? It's true what they say about Texas. Come on,
I guess, yeah. I don't know. Did she help him out of bed since he couldn't even lift himself up afterwards? I don't know. Just I don't buy this one. I mean, I believe that she slept with some guys.
Yeah, maybe she did. She caught him in bed helping Terry Funk, you know,
he fell and his hip broke.
To the
I don't
edge,
know.
Yeah,
I don't know if this was like 89. When she was like just breaking in, was she like a makeup girl or whatever before the York Foundation? So maybe if it's like 89,
Well, no, because then her and Dustin wouldn't have been together that early, right?
Yeah, but when did she start? I thought that's how they met. Wasn't she like a makeup girl for like TBS or something? A makeup artist from CNN from 85 to 91. She did makeup for Jim Crockett Promotions wrestlers on the weekends. She moved to Atlanta in 1988 to keep doing the makeup, and then she debuted in 90. So I'm going to say that's when it was. I'm going to say she banged him in 89 when he was there. He was still a little bit more spry.
But hold on.
She dated Pillman in
90. The issue is that she was with Dustin when this happened.
Though. No, she was not. She did not marry Dustin until 93, this says.
That's why I'm saying it had to have been 94, 98. It couldn't have been 89, because what does Dustin care if Terry
Who said Reynolds- Dustin cared? That, no one said Dustin cared, right?
I think it's because the line says Terry Reynolds in the sleeves post, right? That it implies that.
No, I think that's being too literal with message board posts.
No, me too. So I think yeah, but nothing in that post said that Dustin cared, though. Will, read it again, Dan.
But I'm saying, like, why would Dustin have an issue with walking in on Terry Funk banging this?
No, he
shit?
Didn't. He said Terry Funk's wife caught them.
Yeah, that Terry Funk got caught banging Terry Reynolds by his wife.
Oh, yeah, I think it could be true. I'm going to go 50-50 in the sense that if it happened, it wouldn't surprise me at all. But at the same time, like, if you're going to bang a wrestler, I don't think Terry Funk would be, like, in your top 15%.
No, not even close. But my guess is, I'm thinking 89, she's a young makeup artist. Funk's in a big position in the company, main eventing, kind of on the booking committee, whatever. And that's when it happened. She's trying to find her way in life. And then she dated Pillman in 90, it says. So I'm going to go. I'll go with 50% too, but I think it's 89.
I'm going to say it's 98, and it's Terry Funk's ultimate way of getting back at the egg-sucking dog Rhodes family and finally winning the feud.
That would have been a great angle if they brought that back. Nice. He goes back to WCW. I banged your son's wife.
You egg-sucking dog.
She blew out my eye.
That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it's just part of the Rhodes Funk family feud.
both of your kind of lame impersonations are better than Jim Ross's, and Jim Ross feels the need to do his every single week on his show. So kudos to you guys on that.
That's what you get for listening to.
Yeah, actually, I think I might pick Ross's over JR's.
Guys, speaking of Brutus Beefcake, apparently, according to the sleaze, he's gay, and he only likes black guys. He also only works for feds that get him blow.
Okay, so there's a couple things here. I don't believe the first part, and only because if you follow him on Facebook or Twitter, he's got like this really young, plasticky, kind of hot-looking girlfriend slash wife thing going on. I will say that for a while, he probably worked for promotions that would give him blow. I think that's done, though. He seems to have maybe straightened himself out a bit.
Well, if you listen to Suge Knight, every other rapper that's married is gay, so... Why not Brutus Beefcake? I'm sure that if he was that hard up and kind of a crackhead for a while, I'm sure people thought he was gay because he was going to blow anybody to get a hold of that crack pipe. So I'm going to say 70% true.
Look at that picture.
What'd you say?
I sent you over a picture on Skype. Take a look at that. That's a picture of his wife.
Okay. I'm not saying he's gay now. I mean, if he's cleaned up, he probably stopped sucking dick. I'm just saying at the time...
All right, we're going on an awkward path.
I don't know, man. I mean, he used to wear those, like, really tight pink, you know, trunks with all cut up. You'd see his ass or half his ass all the time. I don't know.
Well, it was from San Francisco. It was the barber. But anyway, we're going on a path we shouldn't be going down. And there's nothing wrong with any of this, but, you know, we're just discussing and breaking down the possibilities. So I'm gonna say it's, like, 10% the first one and, like, 80% the second one.
Okay. A friend of the Kevin Kelly Show's Dan Spivey. His modeling career never took off because when he sent his photos to the agency, he accidentally sent compromising shots of himself and Mike Rotundo instead of the Speedo muscle man poses he was banking on getting him into the business.
3%.
Yeah, I was going to say 1%, only because I wouldn't be surprised that he sent the wrong photos. But I don't think it has anything to do with Mike Rotundo. I don't think it has anything to do with modeling. I don't even think he sent it to a modeling agency. I don't think Dan Spivey was ever known as like a model type, was he?
He was a good-looking cat back in the 80s.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know.
He's in rough shape now. You've seen him.
No, I haven't.
You should listen to the Kevin Kelly Show where Kevin interviewed him. A guy that battled through a lot of addiction problems and has cleaned himself up. It's a really cool story, but he is the wear and tear has definitely taken a toll on him. And he talks a lot about Waylon Mercy, which was cool.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I mean, I bet Waylon Mercy is one of those rare cases of, you know, one of those things that never took off was a woulda, coulda, shoulda, but has kind of stood the test of time, especially with the rise of Bray Wyatt.
He has big regrets about the Waylon Mercy run, just where he was physically and mentally. And he just got pissed off one day and left, basically.
Oh, God.
So, but you could tell, like, that he thought that was his chance, and he kind of got screwed up. But it's a really good interview. I implore, if anyone hasn't listened to it, it's one of the more recent episodes of Kevin Kelly Show. I can look up which one exactly it was. But it was a really poignant interview and really cool to hear from a guy that went through what he went through and kind of straightened himself out. Next.
Moving on, Dynamite Kid was originally called Explosion Lad, but got the DK moniker after hilarious rib wherein he violated a sleeping Leilani Kai with a stick of dynamite.
100% false.
Yes, I will go with that. Even though I love the visual of him violating Leilani Kai, I will say it. I like that it's Leilani Kai of all the people.
I'm not saying that he's not a wrestler and that he can't be full of shit, but his book was so refreshing in that it felt so honest, right. Good and bad.
Right, yeah, he would have talked about that probably. Or even Brett's, if anyone else's. Brett's would have. You know, he's got every other freaking thing that everyone else did in that
book. Exactly.
That's Spivey Episodes, episode 43 from September 23rd, so be sure to check that out. All right, Dan, I'm gonna call the bullshit buzzer on that one.
I think so, too. Guys, Dick Togo stabbed a man in a restaurant. I think it was a typo there. He stabbed a man in a restaurant for spilling wine on him. Togo was a very angry man. He also snapped a kid's arm in the ring for missing a spot.
I will say that's true. I think I can see Dick Togo having a very nasty attitude. It looked in the ring. He looked like an angry man. You know, they do some crazy things over in those dojos. I will say 78% true.
I'm going to go 85% true, but I'm going to say it with the caveat that the man probably deserved it, because Dick Togo is a bad man. And if you're going to mess with Dick Togo, that's the price you pay. I'm not advocating murder, by the way. I just wanted to get that out of the way. I'm just saying, Dick Togo, you know, someone you don't mess with. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Dick Togo is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. He's a guy that I've always wanted to kind of put together a compilation of his career, because I loved him in Kai and Tai. I love a lot of his single stuff. He was having great match of the year contenders in DDT, you know, within the last 5 years. So for me, it helps to know that he's kind of a badass. Now, if he was being a bully, I can see that too. But if, you know, we don't know the circumstances. I'm sure that one's actually, he's, you know, if he stabbed somebody, I'm sure that could be corroborated somewhere.
Talk about a lot of dicks tonight.
Hey, y'all picked the topic, man. I'm just following your lead.
Next.
Not me personally. The writer of this post wrote, I did a show Bam Bam Bigelow was on about 4 years ago. He told me on the way home that when he was in WCW that Eric Bischoff would hit on a female talent and would get the boys hookers to keep them happy. Also that Bischoff would swap wives with DDP all the time, and how DDP got his first big title. And that's how, rather, DDP got his first big title run.
Dan, was the show RSV, and was that Adam Murray he talked to?
Possibly.
I mean, the Bischoff story's been around forever, and I feel like we've heard it from so many places. There's got to be some reality ground in there, whether it happened once or multiple times. And we know they were neighbors, DDP and Bischoff. You know, Bischoff frequented the Gold Club, and there's always been stories that he tried to, you know, his wife would get involved in different things. And I mean, I feel there's enough smoke that there has to be fire to the wife swapping thing.
I need to bug David Bixenspan, because he can probably find the court case that involves the Gold Club and get all of those records. Like, he's the kind of muckraker who can find that stuff and put it online and make it official. I really believe that. But I believe the whole thing, and I don't think he just got regular hookers. I think since he was so used to spending Ted Turner's money and wasting it, he probably got high dollar escorts.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I mean, yeah, between the Gold Club stuff and all the rumors with him and Paige before, I mean, it fits the profile 100% that he was doing stuff like that in the late 90s in WCW. It's just a culture.
Yeah, he wasn't getting just, you know, kind of lowbrow hookers that would come into your hotel room, roll a joint, smoke it, and set off the fire alarm. You know what I mean?
It's a very specific scenario.
I have no idea how that came out. I'm just saying. But it's very possible that, you know, he did have...
It's like a hooker that shows up with a purple shirt and these red underwear that comes in...
with a rock cock ring.
That comes into room 237.
Jake the Snake's pink dildo, yeah. The whole nine.
Call the Damien for a reason. All right, Dan, what's next?
I know you guys like fan abuse. Here's some for you. Sabu... bitch slapped a fan for using his real name outside of a show. What Sabu did not know was the guy was a childhood friend he had not seen in 15 years. Also, and this might have something to do with things, Sabu would smoke pot before matches to help with the pain.
The pot stuff would probably be 100% true.
Right, yeah, I would think so. What do you think of the first one there?
I don't know. I mean, it's wrestling. It's ECW. I'm going to say the whole story is true.
Yep, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Harley Race, speeding through the Lake of the Ozarks at night, smashes his speedboat into a family's much smaller dinghy, killing the folks on the little boat.
What?
All right, I'm going to say there's a good chance he smashed his speedboat or motorboat at some point because he was drunk off his ass, and that's what wrestlers did. I do not think he just murdered a young family or something like that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think this is 0%. I think that would have come out, or there would have been some local story that hung around, like the Jimmy Snuka story. Right. You know?
Yeah, I'll say that he probably crashed his boat at some point. I will not say that he killed someone.
Yeah, let's. It wouldn't be 434 on this list, I don't think, if that were true. I think a lot more people would know about it. Would have been up higher on this list. Anyway,
Christ.
The real reason Raven got fired back when he was Johnny Polo and got shitty deal during his Raven run with WWE was because Vince blames him for corrupting both Shane and Stephanie when they were teens. Shane more so than Steph. Scotty would take Shane out all night partying and load him up on coke and angel dust. He also once gave Steph weed when she was only 14 years of age.
I'm going to say that I think it could be true.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say there's some probably some truth to that.
The only reason I think it might not be true is that Vince hired him back.
Right. And that's why I could see the Shane part being true. Not like the angel dust, but I could see him taking Shane out and getting him drunk and going to strip clubs and stuff. I don't think he gave Stephanie drugs at 14. Like, I maybe joked about it or something and Vince fired him because of it, but...
No, I could see him giving a 14-year-old pot. That part is, like, the least shocking part, you know, for me. I really could. I could see him, like, you know, Stephanie hanging around wrestlers and, you know, someone's passing a joint and he passes the joint to her. I absolutely could see that. Like, that would not shock me in the least.
But yeah, he did. Well, remember the story, though, is always that he walked in the room and Raven was there and he, who the fuck hired Raven? Remember that? And there's an F-bomb, but that was a quote. I don't know if that should count. you remember
that absolutely counts. Damn it. That absolutely counts. Three to four.
Do you remember the story? Do you ever hear that story? No.
No, I have no idea. Why don't you tell it to me and repeat that line again?
Raven was sitting in a room. And Vince McMahon walked in and said, "Who the F hired Raven?" And so they made it like he didn't even know that Raven was back. So,
oh, well, but he stuck around for a while.
I know. So that's why I never was. I mean, maybe that happened. He didn't know they hired him. But if he didn't fire him immediately, this couldn't have been that bad of blood. Because, yeah, he was around for like 3 years.
Yeah, man. So we'll go 50-50.
All right. In a match between Bad News Brown and Andre the Giant, when Andre did a sit-down splash on Brown, he lost control of his bowels and shit all over him.
Bad News Brown confirmed that in a shoot interview. 100% true.
Yep, I believe it.
Okay, I'll move on then. Vince McMahon asked Goldust to get breast implants put in, and he seriously thought about it.
I'm going to say that's true, too. I can definitely see him, you know, even if it was a... Even if it was like a throwaway thing, like the cock ring, you know, just throwing it out there one night. Like, I believe 100% that Vince McMahon said at one point Goldust should get breast implants. And that Goldust considered it because he wanted to be a star.
I'm actually going to go the other way with this in the sense that with Goldust, they never pushed that character as far as he could have really pushed it. Like, Vince was actually really timid about that type of stuff. Where they would tease stuff, but they would never actually pull away and just do that kind of questionable material. I don't think it's true. I'm going to go 15% chance.
If I remember though, I feel like it was like 98 or 99 when that story came out. So I feel like by that point, Vince was a little more loose to the idea. You know what I mean? Like all the stuff that was going on, the sexual stuff in 99. Like I could definitely see it had been on the table and Dustin. Seems like the guy who's really, you know, self-conscious about himself and always wants to prove, kind of got the daddy complex at the time, so trying to, you know, prove his loyalty. So it just wouldn't shock me if, like, they were in a writer's meeting, you know, Vince Russo threw out the idea and Vince loved it. Oh, yeah, it's a great pal. And, you know, and then they told Dustin and he's like, oh, you know, I'll think about it. And then they backed off. Like, I feel like I believe that the conversation would have happened at some point. Like, I don't think it ever got to the drawing board, or like, I don't think Dustin visited plastic surgeons, you know, to like get fitted or anything like that. But
with Dustin's outfit, I think they could have easily just put in like, fakes. So that's why I don't think it was true. Like, you know, nobody's living the gimmick that far, man.
I'm going to say 85% true that it came up in some conversation at some point, even if it was like for like 3 minutes and then they laughed it off. Like, I believe that it was discussed at some point.
Okay, I think that's message board poster smoking a lot of pot and typing up shit.
Is that from Johnny Sorrow, that one?
Yeah, no, not Johnny.
Okay.
This next one I could easily see as being 1,000% true. Asshole of the Year candidate Steve Corino walked out on a booking after seeing The Ring because he felt the mat was too dirty for him. Knowing what I know about Corino, I could easily see him walking out on this venture.
I would say it's probably true, but he wouldn't have talked about it, so someone else would have had to leak the story because he doesn't come back to talk about the thing. So,
right.
Yeah, I would say it's probably true. What do you think, Will?
I'm kind of torn, man, because seriously. I mean, I know what you're saying with Corino. Like, I could see him going out there and a ring being too dirty, worried about getting staff or something, you know, and saying, I'm not going to wrestle on that. But at the same time, just a couple of years ago, he was here in San Antonio wrestling at a VFW against an ROH guy. God, one of the early ROH guys from San Antonio. If you said the name, I'd get it. Anyway, he was wrestling a match in the main event here at a VFW outside on a mat that was pretty freaking dirty. So I don't know, man. I'm going to go 50-50.
Hmm. Okay. 50-50, like Dan's broken heart.
Rat bastard. Room for one more, guys. Gangrel got into a fight with the young guy, started working the shows because a kid had almost the same gimmick as him. He kept yelling at him, give me my gimmick back, and you took my gimmick, and he kicked the crap out of him, incidentally. Another friend of the Kevin Kelly Show, by the way, Gangrel.
Knowing how protective wrestlers are, the gimmicks, and he was really the first like vampire guy, so I could see as it caught on, if he crossed paths with someone that was doing the gimmick, he'd get a little pissed off and let loose. I don't know if he beat the crap out of him, but I could definitely see him getting in some guy's face about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is one of those gimmicks that, you know, especially on the indie scene. I mean, if there's one thing that the movie The Wrestler did was kind of show how petty and how absurd things can be at the indie level. Okay. Kind of brought that to the masses, but like when talking to wrestlers or people that have been there, yeah. Something that like gimmick infringement would absolutely start a fight in the locker room.
Well, there you go.
And time is up.
All right. So that was fun. And I feel like we left a lot of sleaze in the bag. I mean, I know there are some real bad ones in there, so we'll have to revisit this game.
I feel like taking a shower. I think I'm going to go clean myself from the filth.
Okay, I'm going to go sort through my box of goodies. So we'll go ahead and take a break. We got one more game to go, and then we get some mail to do, and then we'll wrap things up. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
I have a feeling that it wasn't Vince McMahon who brought up The Rock cockering, but it was you. I think you have WWF marketed sex toys, and you're just waiting for the right time to leash it on the public.
I do have Brutus Beefcake clippers that I use for my manscaping.
Oh, shit. Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only place to be nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows, not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
We're back. Hope you enjoyed that break. You're all about the shows on the PTBN PWO feed. And of course, earlier you heard all the shows on the Place to Be podcast feed. Be sure to check those both out on iTunes and leave a rating too. Hit us with a 5-star on there. Leave some feedback. That stuff goes a long way in helping us gain some profile. We'll talk more about PlayStation.com in just a moment. First, though, Dan, we have one more fall to go. So why don't you impart some wisdom on us and tell us what is this third challenge?
Our third fall is, and you can tell from the anthem that's playing in the background, no room for losers, guys, because we are the champions.
I love it. No room for losers.
Get out of here, losers. So this game is a little bit of a challenge for us. Dan's going to give us a championship from wrestling history, and we'll, you know, do as many as we can in the 30 minutes. And Will and I are going to attempt to build the title lineage of these championship titles from memory. So we're not going to cheat. We're not going to look at Wikipedia. No Graham Cawthon site. Nothing else.
I didn't even study because I had no idea what we were doing before we started recording.
Studying not necessary. So what Dan's going to do is if we get one wrong, we're not going to like stop or lose. Dan's just going to make a little tick mark and let us know that we're incorrect and we have to re-sort where we are. So if we pick the wrong guy, Dan says that's wrong, then we'll try and guess the right one. And we'll see how far we can go, or if we can get through this whole thing with as few X's as we can as we move through this. So, all right. So, Dan, which championship are we going to do first?
Since this is the inaugural of this particular event, let's just go with one that probably should be, you know, we'll see. It'll generate discussion anyway. We're going to go with the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
All right, so this is the original, the one that came through, merged as the Undisputed, stayed, you know, during the invasion, like all that stuff. This is the one that was the SmackDown belt and then goes through to today. So the original official WWF, WWWF, WWE, Undisputed World Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, God.
So we got a ways to go starting back in, what, the 70s or 60s, whenever the first champion was crowned. And, Will, why don't you do the early ones? I think you can handle those.
I think that's about all I can handle.
Okay. I'm going to
say that originally Buddy Rogers was the champ, right? The WWF champ. And then Bruno beat Buddy Rogers. Is that correct?
So far, so good.
Okay.
Then Bruno was defeated by Ivan Koloff in the Garden. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And after, like, what, an 8-year run by Bruno or something insane? Then Ivan only held it for a couple of weeks, and he was defeated by Pedro Morales. Is that correct?
That's right. Title renamed the WWF Heavyweight Championship when WWF rejoined the NWA in 1971.
Okay. Then Pedro held it for a couple of years. And then Pedro lost it to Stan Stasiak.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then Stasiak lost it back to Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bruno lost it to Graham.
Yep.
And then Graham lost it to Backlund. Backlund had a nice 5-year run, you know. So then from there, Backlund lost it to Iron Sheik, even though Sheik was on Vern Gagne's payroll. That's cool. But, you know,
there was a little caveat in 79 where
with Antonio Inoki.
Right. It wasn't recognized by WWE, and then he eventually vacated the title. And it's convoluted and confusing, all involving a couple shows in Japan.
Right. Well, I knew about the Inoki thing, but yeah, at the same time, I didn't want to bring it up because it's not official canon, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yeah. So then Iron Sheik gets it. Okay. And since he's on Vern Gagne's payroll, there's a possible threat that he may or may not break Hulk Hogan's leg or cripple him or whatever the hell Sheik says he's going to do. But then Hulk Hogan wins it. Then Hulk Hogan loses the belt. I want to say, am I wrong? Like, he loses it to Andre, who sells it to DiBiase, but then the belt is held up?
Yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because DiBiase didn't win the belt. You can't buy the belt. You have to earn it. Plus, there was the whole referee Earl and Dave Hebner debacle, correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then from there, Randy Savage wins at WrestleMania 4. Savage holds it for a year until he loses it back to Hogan, who holds it for a year when he loses it to Warrior, who loses it to Sergeant Slaughter, who loses it to Hogan at WrestleMania. And then when Hogan
loses it to
Undertaker.
Yep.
Then Hogan regains it back at this Tuesday in Texas, mm-hmm, correct? Then what happened to where the belt is held up to where Ric Flair wins it at the Royal Rumble? What happened?
So the belt gets held up because there was a fishy ending at Tuesday in Texas. Jack Tunney got knocked out. Hogan cheated to win. So Tunney strips some of the belt and says it's held up because of all the chicanery that happened in Survivor Series and Tuesday in Texas. So the belt gets put up in the Rumble, Flair wins, and then, of course, we get Macho Man wins it at WrestleMania 8, and then Flair wins it back from him on Primetime Wrestling in Hershey.
And then Bret Hart defeats Flair,
mm-hmm,
and then Yokozuna defeats Bret Hart, correct?
Yes.
And then Hulk Hogan beats Yokozuna 9 seconds later.
Yep, for his fifth title.
And then Yokozuna gets it back at King of the Ring. Hogan goes bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bret wins it back at WrestleMania 10.
Correct.
Yep.
And then Bret holds it until Diesel wins it.
Bob Backlund beats him at Survivor Series. You're doing
in
well.
San Antonio.
Yep. And then Diesel won it a few days later in MSG, I think a week later.
That's right. But then Bret win it from Diesel?
Yes. Survivor Series 95. Diesel holds it for a year. Bret wins it.
Oh, wow. Okay, see, I thought him and Bret traded it a couple of times. It was just one title change then.
Yep, so Diesel beat Backlund, lost to Bret, and that was his year as champ, and that's done. And then Bret holds it till 12 when he loses to Shawn.
Right, who holds the belt until he loses his smile.
Nope, he loses it to Sid at Survivor Series. And then
Survivor Series what?
96.
Then Sid loses it back on It's Time.
He loses it back to Shawn at Rumble in San Antonio. That's what
Man, I'm forgetting all these San Antonio title changes. I didn't watch wrestling back then. That's why this is really a hard time for me.
So he wins it back in San Antonio. Then he loses his smile. And the title gets put up at Final Four. And Bret wins Final Four and wins a title there.
Dude, this is hard.
We got it. We're just getting going. So Bret wins it at Final Four, and then he loses the next night to Sid on Raw when Austin interferes. And then, do you remember who Sid loses it to there?
Undertaker at WrestleMania 13.
Correct. And Undertaker holds it till SummerSlam when he loses to
Bret Hart.
Yes, and Bret Hart, obviously.
Let's do that. Let's do it where you set up the story, and okay, then I'll fill in the blank.
Okay, that's fun. All right, so Bret wins it at SummerSlam, and he loses it at the most obvious, memorable title change of all time.
Survivor Series 1997, the Montreal Screwjob.
Yep, and Shawn Michaels reigns throughout the winter as D-Generation X, and then he passes the torch to who at WrestleMania?
Stone Cold.
That's right. And then Stone Cold marches on until King of the Ring when he has an unlikely blip in his title reign because he loses to who at King of the Ring?
Kane in a first blood match.
And then wins it back the next night. Steve Austin does.
That's correct.
And then he holds it until Breakdown 98 when there's some kerfluffle involved. And he ends up, do you remember who he loses to and what happens to the title?
No.
So Undertaker and Kane in a triple threat double pin him, and the title gets held up by Vince McMahon.
So they have the tournament at Survivor Series 98,
mm-hmm.
where The Rock turns heel after being like a brief baby face, correct?
Yep, and there was a blip in their Judgment Day. Taker and Kane fought for the vacant title, and Austin was the ref, and he counted them both out and left with the title and all that shit, and then he got fired. That's when Vince fired him. And then he came back from with Shane. But yes, Rock wins the Survivor Series. And now we get a little... This is where it starts to get... We get some flurries of changes here. So he loses to who on one of the more memorable Raw moments?
I don't know. Maybe Raw in 1999 to Mankind, where JR was in attendance.
Yes, greatest moment ever. Then Mankind loses it back at Royal Rumble 99 to Rock in the I Quit. And then we get another flip, do you remember, on Halftime Heat. Mankind wins it back.
I don't remember his second title run.
Yeah, he wins it back, right, Dan, at Halftime Heat?
Yeah, the empty arena match that was there during halftime of Super Bowl 33 in January 31st of 1999.
You know what? I want to know, who was in the Super Bowl 99?
It was the Falcons
was that
and Broncos.
Falcons and Broncos. Yeah, that was a horrible Super Bowl.
Should have been the Jets. They choked that stupid AFC title game.
God, I don't even want to talk about it. My Packers lost to the Broncos the year before, so I was really bitter about that.
Jets would have stomped the shit out of the Falcons, too. Anyway, so then Mankind lost it back on Raw because they have the last man standing at Valentine's Day Massacre where they both get knocked out, and then they have the ladder match on Raw where Big Show comes out and costs Foley the title, right, Dan?
Yeah, in that ladder match.
Okay. I do not remember that at all.
From Birmingham, Alabama.
So then we go to WrestleMania, Will, and who wins there from The Rock?
Stone Cold.
Yes, Stone Cold reigns again. And he holds it until, I believe, of course, Over the Edge, the night Owen Hart tragically passed away, but he did lose the title. There was a title change that night. Do you remember who he lost it to? Take that as a no.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had it on mute again. God, I hate it. No, I said he lost it to The Undertaker.
Yes, he did.
But I don't remember that Undertaker title reign.
It was very brief. He held it till the night after King of the Ring. So King of the Ring, Taker fought Rock, defended the title, and then the next night he loses it to Austin in a wild match on Raw that had like a huge rating, I believe.
Austin sure it did. Back. Then all of that garbage had huge ratings.
And then they did the first blood match at Fully Loaded, where Austin retained against Undertaker. So Austin keeps it until SummerSlam 99.
He loses it to Foley,
yep.
who loses it to Triple H the next night.
Yes, and now things get a little dicey again, because Triple H's reign is very brief, because he loses it to a very unpredictable new champion on, I believe it was SmackDown when this happened.
Was it the Big Show?
No, not yet.
The Rock?
Nope.
Give me a hint.
Unlikely champion.
Vince McMahon.
Yes, Vince McMahon beat him on SmackDown for the World Championship.
That's right, and then Vince vacates it.
Yep, and then Triple H wins it back in the six-pack challenge, like the week later, at Unforgiven. And then he loses it to the guy you just talked about.
Big Show.
Yep, at Survivor Series. Big Show was the surprise guest. Big Show loses it back to
Triple H
on Raw, January of 2000. Triple H holds.
You're doing hold on, because I'm able to fill in the blanks. But you're doing all this recap shit from memory.
I sure am, my friend.
God, you're a sick man.
It's a sickness. please, you can talk about every Jerry Lawler match that he had in 1982 and some dingy dump in Memphis. I'm just
because I watched it in the last 3 years.
Yeah, all right. Well, it wasn't that long ago. It was, you know, a good memory. What do you want? Although I don't remember recent stuff, and I couldn't tell you who the champions are today. So he Triple H holds it till Backlash. He holds it through Mania, and he loses to
The Rock.
Yes. And now we get a bunch of back and forth again. Now, Judgment Day, we get the Iron Man.
JT, because I know our fan base will definitely say, so why didn't you mention that happening?
Oh, yes, okay.
Before the Backlash match with the in which Rock won, Chris Jericho on April 17th had defeated Triple H on Raw on Earl Hebner's Fast Count. And, of course,
I just watched that the other day.
Yeah, Triple H forced Hebner to reverse the decision. So there was a quick blip. It's not recognized, but still worth mentioning.
Good call. Not part of canon. Never happened.
Good call.
Never
happened. He's right, though. We'll definitely get someone telling us. So it's good. So, all right, Triple H win. Rock wins at Backlash, and then who wins it in the Iron Man at Judgment Day?
I think The Rock retained it, didn't he?
No,
Triple H won, even with the Taker interference and everything?
Yep, because he actually gets Rock DQ'd because he attacks Triple H.
Oh, okay, because I just watched that Iron Man the other day, too. Still holds up.
Yeah, you liked it?
One of the better Triple H matches from that year. I actually liked it. Compared to stuff like stuff that gets pimped as like really as a really good Triple H match, which I thought was horrible garbage. It exposed everything that's horrible about Triple H is the Taka Michinoku Raw match.
Yeah.
Okay, people are like, oh, Taka almost pinned him. Taka gets one flurry of offense after getting destroyed. Triple H, the only time he showed any type of vulnerability. The only time he showed any vulnerability was after Kaientai double teams him, and then the APA comes out and lays him out, and he still beats Taka 4-on-1. You know, so Triple H, your savior, can win after being attacked by four wrestlers. Complete what? Garbage.
Was the Rikishi match on there? He had a match with Rikishi on TV. I remember it.
I think that was a SmackDown match, wasn't it?
SmackDown, yeah. I remember people remember that one pretty fondly as Rikishi having a chance. And then he had one with Holly, too. I think it was like on Heat or something. Or SmackDown. He had a really good match with Holly, I thought.
Yeah, the Rikishi match happened after Hunter and Stephanie had did a raffle.
Okay.
Where they would keep pulling out names, and like Mae Young was a name, and Brooklyn Brawler was a name. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, no, the real name was Rikishi on the ticket. But either way, man, the Triple H 2000 overrated, but that's another day.
Did you enjoy Vince McMahon's funny walk when Undertaker came in and he walks up to him and then turns around and marches away?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, so Triple H is our champion. We head to King of the Ring 2000, and we have a six-man match with the title on the line. Do you remember who wins it in that one?
Kurt Angle?
No, it was The Rock wins it back. It was Rock, Kane, and Undertaker versus Triple H and the McMahons, and Rock, the most unfair, lopsided title match of all time. And Rock pinned, I think, Vince to win the title there. So Rock's your champion. He holds it for a while here into 2000, and then he loses to who at No Mercy?
Has to be Kurt Angle, right?
Yes, it is Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle holds it all through the winter, and then in No Way Out, he loses it back to
The Rock to set up the WrestleMania 17 main event.
Yes, and that is where Steve Austin wins the title with the help of Vince McMahon, turns heel, holds it all through the invasion, but we get a small blip at Unforgiven 2001 when he loses to
Booker T?
Nope, it was right after 9/11 in Pittsburgh.
Test?
Nope, right after 9/11 in Pittsburgh.
Kurt Angle.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Kurt Angle wins it 2 weeks after 9/11 or a week after 9/11 and again in his hometown of Pittsburgh. And then,
hey,
yep.
True story. This is why when you said 9/11, I immediately said test. No, seriously.
I'm interested. Go ahead.
Check this out.
Yeah.
Check this out. So what ended up happening was the night before 9/11 happened, the Monday Night Raw was filmed in San Antonio, Texas. And the main event of that Raw was Rock versus Test. Okay. And so like we said, 9/11, I always think Test for 9/11.
Well, there you go.
And on the undercard, I think it was RVD and Kurt Angle. And in the shocker of all shockers, thanks to interference from Chronic, who came out, because remember Chronic ran down, you know, the arena, kind of like Roman Reigns does. Chronic, they were right, because we had really good seats. We were kind of like where the first level meets the second level. So, like, you know, the entranceway was right there. And Chronic was pumping iron, waiting for their cue to run in on the match. And Booker T actually got a pinfall on The Undertaker that night. Little known fact.
Oh, there you go.
And I popped so hard, I was just so happy Undertaker lost. So.
Well, Kurt Angle did win at Unforgiven, but then a few weeks later lost it back to?
Triple H?
Nope.
Back to Undertaker?
Nope.
The Rock?
Nope. Back to Steve Austin.
Wait, when was that? What year is this?
We're in 01, so Angle wanted it Unforgiven, and then Austin won it back like 3 weeks later on Raw. When William Regal turned on WWF and went to the Alliance.
Okay. So all of the Booker T matches, that's for like the WCW title, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because like him, Kurt Angle, The Rock, Jericho, they all had that belt back and forth in 2001 as well, right?
Yeah, The Rock and Jericho stuff was all the WCW title.
Okay.
So Angle, I mean, Austin keeps it until Vengeance, the one-night tournament, and he loses it to who? Who becomes the Undisputed Champion.
Oh, Chris Jericho.
Yes, and Chris Jericho, we all know how that ends.
Yeah, loses it to Stephanie and her dog at WrestleMania 18.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, he holds
it. Oh, no, I know who wins the next. My man, brother, beats Triple H,
yep,
correct?
Backlash, yep.
Who loses it to Undertaker?
Yes, at Judgment Day.
Who loses it back to Triple H in one of the worst matches of all time?
No, Undertaker actually retained it.
But it was one of the worst matches of the year, right?
Yes, yep, it was brutal. They were both hurt.
Okay, well, they both sucked too.
Right.
Yeah.
No, Taker lost it at Vengeance in a three-way to a returning superstar.
Oh, really?
Well, we had another one of those great, you know, title changes that got reversed the same night type of deal. Rob Van Dam defeated Undertaker May 20th, but then Ric Flair restarted the match and Undertaker defeated him, nullifying Van Dam's reign and continuing Undertaker's. And then we got to Vengeance.
Okay, there you go.
And he lost it in a three-way?
Yep, it was. He lost it to The Rock. It was Rock, Kurt Angle, and Undertaker in a three-way match. So Rock had just come back. Yeah, he had just come back after he left after WrestleMania and he had to make a movie. And then he had just returned. That's when Austin left and he came back and did the took his ball and left speech, and then he won the title. And then at SummerSlam he lost to who?
To Brock Lesnar.
Yes. And then Brock Lesnar keeps it till MSG at Survivor Series and he loses it to
The Big Show.
Yes, he did, and Big Show only held it for a month and then he lost it to
Brock Lesnar.
Nope, Kurt Angle.
Oh, okay. And then Brock re-wins it at a WrestleMania?
Accurate. And Brock Lesnar holds it until, let's see, I think.
Until Eddie beats him.
Nope. There's a back and forth in here. So he loses it to Angle on, is it on SmackDown, Dan? Oh, no, wait, no, at Vengeance. Angle wins another three-way, right? It's Big Show, Brock, and Kurt.
Yeah, from Vengeance 03 in Denver. Yep. Yeah.
See, now we're getting into that time period where I really didn't give a shit.
Yeah, we're going to get there quickly for me. It's coming. Angle held it. He beat Brock at SummerSlam. Then he loses it back to Brock in the Iron Man after Brock had turned heel.
Can we just end this title when Eddie wins it and I can be smiling and happy?
Well, we're getting there. So Brock Lesnar wins it in the Iron Man on SmackDown and loses it to
Eddie Guerrero. No Way Out 2004.
And then Eddie Guerrero loses it to
JBL, A Great American Bash.
Yes, and then JBL keeps it all the way until WrestleMania when he loses to
Big Show.
No.
Undertaker.
No.
Kurt Angle.
You can't see me. Da, da, da,
da. Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. John, that's where we're ending this one. I can't keep track of all this stuff.
Well, let me see if I can go any further because this is where I start to lose it. So John Cena wins it at WrestleMania 21. And he holds it until, is it Edge in New Year's Revolution, Dan?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so Edge cashes in.
After surviving the Elimination Chamber, Edge then And then
he has sex with Lita or something, right?
Yes, he does. And then he loses it back to Cena at the Rumble. And then Cena holds it until RVD, one night stand.
Yeah, Rob Van Dam cashing in his Money in the Bank contract from WrestleMania 22 at the ECW one night stand.
And he had to vacate it, right?
Well, no, he lost it to Edge after he got busted for the pot like a week later.
Okay. I thought they vacated his title.
No, Edge beat him on Raw, right, Dan? Was it like July 4th or something? It was like around there, wasn't it?
Yeah, just a 22-day reign for Rob Van Dam. Edge, it was, Philadelphia Raw. It was a triple threat match also involving Cena. The title was exclusive to Raw, obviously, but Edge was your victor in that particular match.
All right, then Edge loses it back to Cena at Unforgiven.
What year are we in? I'm
06.
Lost.
We're in 06. So Unforgiven 06.
I was not watching this product at all. I was completely tuned out.
You might want to check out that TLC match, though, with
I think I've seen it. I think I compiled a match of the year set with that match on it. But
yeah, so he held it. So Cena wins it at Unforgiven in Toronto. And then that's when he holds it for the year, right, Dan? So he doesn't lose it now until he gets hurt. Was it like October?
Yeah, when he does that PSA about he tore his pectoral tendon right off his shoulder or whatever, that was he had to vacate it October of 2007.
Right, and then they have the whole thing with the like three title matches, and I think does Orton end the night as champ?
Yeah, Orton's awarded the title by Mr. McMahon, then Triple H wins it. And then Orton then beats Triple H in a last man standing match at the end of the night from Rosemont. No Mercy 2007.
Okay. All right. This is where it gets kind of tricky. So Orton holds it until. Let me think here. So 08. All right. He holds it through that. So does he lose it to Triple H? After, was it like Backlash or something?
Yeah, correct. Backlash 08, fatal four-way elimination match also involving Cena and JBL.
All right. I don't know. It gets tricky from there.
I have no idea. I'm lost.
Triple H 2008. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know who he loses it back to.
We go all the way to November at Survivor Series from Boston. And it was a triple threat match that also involved Vladimir Kozlov, as well as Triple H, and the man who won the match, which was...
Jeff Hardy?
He was originally scheduled to take part in the match, good call, but he did not.
Edge?
He was attacked prior to the event. So yes, Edge won it from Survivor Series 08.
Okay. All right, we can stop there, because I think it gets muddy from there. I don't want it to just be you reading Wikipedia. So
all we know is that it ended when Randy Orton unified it in Houston against John Cena at TLC.
All those reigns we talked about, Will, we got a few minutes left here. What are your favorites from some of the ones we mentioned, like just the reigns themselves?
Well... favorite title wins would be like Eddie Guerrero's title win. That was like one of my favorite title wins. The Bob Backlund reign. I love Bob Backlund stuff from the early 80s. He had great matches against Buddy Rose, Adrian Adonis. The list goes on and on. Inoki. So I really like Backlund a lot. Randy Savage was a great champion, but he was really feuding with Ted DiBiase, right? Those are like kind of like okay, not great matches.
Right.
Had some really hot matches, but overall just okay. I'm kind of having a hard time coming up with some other like really great, memorable, like all-time favorite runs. You know, like where I was just so excited this guy was champion. Like I was excited when Goldberg was champion. I was excited when Jericho and Rock were feuding over the WCW title. WWF title I've always been kind of sterile on.
Brett's 94 run was one of my favorites as a kid.
I didn't really care. Yeah, I wasn't watching then when it happened, you know, and so I didn't really care about it, you know.
And I was so excited. And I was so excited when Flair won the belt, but neither of his reigns. He was so much better, like, kind of chasing it in WWF. His two reigns were, I mean, his first one was fun, only because it was him torturing Savage and Elizabeth. So I guess I'd maybe rate that one. And then Savage had that summer reign where he didn't like really do much on TV with the title. He was on house shows a lot in Europe, and so it's kind of a weird reign for him. I mean, Shawn's in 96 had some, you know, good matches, even though ratings were in the toilet. And then I remember being excited, and even though I'm not like the biggest fan of this guy, it felt cool that Undertaker like finally won the belt for real at WrestleMania 13, and he was starting to really kind of get going. He had come off the Mankind feud, so he was a little bit better in the ring. It felt like a kind of a lifetime achievement award for him at that point. It was kind of like, all right, you know, here's one guy that's been around through all this trash in the last few years, and we're finally going to make this his time. And then, you know, Brett's reign should have been great with the Canada stuff, but it was immediately relegated to the back seat in the fall, so that kind of stunk.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that belt, like the entire thing, I mean, Triple H holding it for so long, that was horrible. I think Austin, even though he was champion and drove a lot of merchandise and numbers, I never thought his reigns were like really classic, memorable, super awesome reigns. Like they weren't like Ric Flair as one of the horsemen type reigns.
The Invasion one, I think, was his best one. And that was because he had the good match of Benoit and Jericho, and then he had the stuff with Angle. And then like, I thought that heel run was his best work.
Even though his heel turn kind of screwed up business, I'll agree with that.
In ring wise, it was his best.
Yeah, I just, you know, there are very few title reigns that really got me excited. I'm not a fan of WWF booking overall. I think that's the problem. Is I think, you know, that when they have something hot like Daniel Bryan's title reign, they screw it up by like putting him with Kane. You know, the CM Punk's title reign could have been really hot, but we talked about that on the last show and the show before. It's just, I think the titles that I'd be really excited about, I don't think that they ever really made me care, you know, about who.
I mean, right down to Brock's last title reign. like I was really excited when he beat Cena, and then it just kind of ended up being nothing.
Yeah, it was, what, two matches? Now, to be fair, you know, he has Match of the Year contenders when he does show up at the Rumble and then at Mania, but, you know, 3-4 months without defending the belt, you know. I kind of wish that he had the title on this current contract where he wrestles more often.
Yeah.
No. 1 minute to go, guys. One minute to go.
They could do it. Like, I wouldn't be shocked.
What do you think was the worst, the most embarrassing title reigns?
Stan Stasiak. No.
Maybe, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah, I think that was designed to be a shitty one. I mean, I don't know. Like Yokozuna, but I don't know. Like that worked as a kid, like in a pure heel way of just wanting him to lose the belt and like guys not being able to get it done because he's like this monster.
Yeah, I think maybe like Mankind's win over The Rock on that Raw.
That was a great moment.
I'm sorry.
But his reign, yeah, his reign wasn't much so, but that was more about the moment. Yeah, maybe like the O2 stuff. Like Triple H getting this big, huge mega comeback and then he loses it a month later to Hogan, who then ratings immediately tank, even though everyone loved him. Then he loses it to Taker, who's like just not at his best. And then so that stretch from like when I'd say Jericho's reign was super disappointing, obviously. So that stretch from like the Rumble 02 through like Brock winning it was kind of rough.
All right, guys, time is up. Funny stat, though. I love how they do the number of reigns for a guy, and then they show the number of days they held the title. I don't know how accurate these numbers are, but it's funny to me to think that both Buddy Rogers and Rob Van Dam held the belt for the same amount of times and the same amount of days. One reign each.
That's hilarious.
22 days.
Two legends of the ring. So PlayStation.com, just want to direct you there really quickly because we have some cool stuff up. A new episode of Where the Big Boys Play, Beach Blast 92, Chad and Parv back in the house. That's a great show, both the podcast itself, Where the Big Boys Play, is great, as is Beach Blast 92. So that's a must listen. Our network, excellent network adventure continued today, our 12th installment, World Class from 12/27/82, a new walk around the web. We have a new podcast out there, Rank and File. Jordan Duncan's hosting that one, was joined by Steve Willing, Glenn Butler. They counted down their top 10 current favorite wrestlers in the world. And Scott and I were back with an all-new Place to Be podcast, of course, episode 386, looking at Judgment Day 2005. We had a new episode of the NBA Team podcast and a very new Between the Sheets, episode number 16, November 3rd through the 9th, 1994, Dr. Lucha, Steve Sims. And of course, it is the holiday season, so if you're going to be shopping on Amazon, like I know you all do, I see you posting and talking about it all the time, visit over PlaySimulation.com first, click the Amazon banner on the right-hand side, then continue your shopping. That is the only thing you need to do to help kick back a little bit of percentage over to PlaySimulation.com and keep us up and running. So very simple, PlaySimulation.com, click the Amazon banner, and then you can rock and roll with your shopping for the holidays. And like I said earlier, if you don't mind stopping over on iTunes as well, rating our feeds, Place to Be Podcast, and the PWO PTBN feed as well. We have a new tournament kicking off in a couple weeks. Be sure to stay tuned to our social media to follow that. The Holiday Extravaganza, where we have 128 entries, movies, TV, music, songs, memories, moments, anything to do with the holidays are all jumbled into one big giant mess. And we're going to see what is the best holiday tradition. So that tournament kicks off the week of Thanksgiving. Be sure to keep an eye out for that. So, Dan McGinn, it is mailbag time. I think we're going to do 5 minutes tonight. We'll do 5 minutes of mail. So why don't you go ahead and fire up the bag and read the letters from your sack.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Enough about my sack for one evening. Thank you very much. Guys, the at the Micker, we get these from Twitter sometimes, at the Micker. He writes, if it hasn't already been covered, which it hasn't because we run the show, what are your thoughts on the Survivor Series 2015 Championship Tournament, and do you have any alternative booking options for the vacated title?
Yes, anything versus what they're going to do, I'm sure. What did you think of the brackets, Will, and the way they set this thing up?
Well, are we doing spoilers here, like SmackDown spoilers?
All right, let's announce it right now. If you do not want to know what happened on SmackDown, just fast forward like 2 minutes, okay? So we're going to talk about it. Go ahead.
Okay, so I like things like Kalisto upsetting Ryback because it comes out of left field, right?
Mm-hmm.
That happens on SmackDown, so that's a SmackDown spoiler. I like Cesaro beating Money in the Bank winner Sheamus.
Yes.
Okay. I don't like that Cesaro is in the same bracket as Roman Reigns. Because to me, I think, you know what, Cesaro's getting over and with his ring work. He's always been able to do that, even when put in bad positions. I would let Cesaro run with it. I would just, you know what, we're going to go with this guy, see what he can do, and, you know, let the chips fall where they are. I mean, what are you going to do? Get even lower ratings, maybe? Or maybe they'll just get a champion that someone cares about, because that's something that they haven't had with this horrible Seth Rollins run. So
have they said the next round on TV next week, or is it at the pay-per-view? Do we know that for sure yet?
I think the final four is going to be at the pay-per-view.
I wanted the eight on there.
No, I mean, I guess, but they're not very good at like surprises, and this isn't the Attitude Era where you can do something. I mean, because even if they pull off something like Roman Reigns turning with the Authority, well, who really cares about the Authority anymore?
I hope they don't do that.
But even then, if they let him win, I mean, it's so predictable. It's so stale. I mean, Dean Ambrose joins the Authority. Who cares? It's just, it's not interesting. It's like I said, if Cesaro's in the final four, yeah, that's interesting. Cesaro, Kalisto, Kevin Owens, and name another guy. Maybe even a Dean Ambrose.
Right.
Well, now you got four guys who legitimately, you have no idea who's going to win this thing. You know, you'd think probably Ambrose out of those four. But at the same time, you're thinking, wow, I really have no idea which one of these guys is going to come out champ.
And it's going to be Reigns, Del Rio, Owens, and Ambrose. I mean, I think that's pretty clear.
Exactly.
And they could do a little swervy swerve, though, and have Owens beat Ambrose. I think everyone's assuming Reigns Ambrose is the final. So, I mean, you could have Owens knock off Ambrose and at least do Reigns Owens for the final slot. I mean,
well, I think people think it's going to be Reigns Ambrose with the idea that one of them turns to the Authority.
What if Owens joins the Authority? What if that's the story?
Who cares? Because the Authority sucks as a storyline.
I know, but what if that? So I know, but in their mind, I'm saying. So what if that's the swerve? What if Owens is the guy? Or what if they double turn? What if what if instead of Ambrose and Reigns and one of them turns, what if Owens and Reigns turns heel and Owens becomes your top face?
Oh, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not interested in it. If Cesaro doesn't win, I don't care. Cesaro and Kalisto, your final. That's my final.
I mean, if they want to turn Reigns heel, like, instead of having him do it because he joins the Authority, what if Ambrose beats him and then he snaps? And that's why he turns heel. Instead of he wins the title because he turned heel and joined the Authority. You know what I mean? So, like, what if Ambrose actually upsets him with, like, a small package or something? And then he snaps and beats the shit out of his friend. Like, that's a heel turn.
Yeah, I still wouldn't care because Triple H and Stephanie are still involved, and I don't care about them.
No, let's go to the next one. What if they're not involved?
They are going to be involved. Because
not involved! They're not booked!
No, because they have to be the center of attention, and that's why this show sucks. And that's why I don't watch it.
I don't watch it either. I'm just trying to come up with some ideas.
I know, because we're not afraid to record shows on Monday nights when this stuff is going on.
Not afraid at all. Not booked. All right, Dan, what do we got?
Well, guys, at Pro Rest Only writes, what wrestler is most capable of making the most awesome chili?
Just so you know, that's my buddy Charles from Pro Wrestling Only. That's Loss.
He's a chili fan.
Has to be Terry Funk. He's the one hosting the WrestleMania 8 barbecue next year in Texas.
I bet Kevin Owens probably makes some good chili. Just
or Harley Race. Harley Race is known for his backyard barbecue, so maybe he's a Harley Race or Terry Funk.
I'm trying to picture what other wrestlers would be like big cooks. You know, like just envision them in the kitchen making something.
Big Show, didn't he want his own cooking show on network?
I bet JR probably makes a good chili, right? Jim Ross? I mean, he's a big cooking guy. Yeah, we'll go with them.
I'm going to say Bill Watts. Bill Watts will pull your eyeball out and throw it in the chili.
And then Aku will eat it.
True story. Read Bill Watts' book, Gone to a Bar Fight, Pulled a Guy's Eye Out.
And put it in chili?
No, just pulled it out.
It's funny because my son tries to yank my eye out every friggin' day. Of course, he's 8 months and not 67, but anyway. Next. Basil's looking for eyes, too.
Yeah, Basil's really upset tonight.
I think he found the bag with the Jake the Snake dildo in it.
One more, guys. Add Greeny P2B. He goes, not including Andre or Big Show. What wrestler do you think would blow up a bathroom the worst after eating a pot of chili?
Vader.
I'm going to stick with Kevin Owens. Yeah, Vader's a good one. Stan Hansen. He's a sloppy son of a bitch. I could see
Yokozuna.
Yes. Yokozuna.
Rikishi.
Maybe Sid when Undertaker comes in, if you believe that urban legend that he shit his pants during the Undertaker's entrance.
No, but we're talking about which one would be by far the worst.
Well, I guess if he's willing to shit his pants in the ring, it's probably pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty shitter.
I don't know, man.
I like Vader.
I've never met anyone whose shit smelled good, so.
I think Vader's a good one. I like Vader. I could see him just blowing it up and not caring.
Somehow Norman the Lunatic has to be involved, I think.
Or Bastion Booger.
It's been an interesting show.
But by far the
show. Welcome back, guys. Welcome back.
By far the show that went into the toilet the quickest.
It's the holidays. What do you expect? Nothing screams Thanksgiving like dildos, sleaze, and shitting.
And rock cock rings.
Yes.
I might not be buying y'all the... NWA classics.
We're close. I will not say another F-bomb. That was a quote. I knew I had leeway. I knew I had one to give. So it's like that Iron Man you watched. You know, you give the DQ for the greater good later on. That's what I mean.
Know. We're still like in the fifth fall. We're okay.
What do we got, Dan? Any more? Are we done?
Do you want another one? Because we've exceeded the 5 minutes talking about crap. So
no, we're good. I don't think we can top what we discussed tonight. So, we'll do
an extended mailbag for the holiday special.
Yeah, Santa sack. We'll do a whole segment on it.
Yeah.
With that. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. The week of Thanksgiving, we'll be back. It's a little holiday treat for y'all. It's great to be back in the saddle here. I really miss doing the show. It's a lot of fun as always. Hope you guys enjoyed it as always. Of course, if you have any mailbag questions or any game suggestions, this up on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. We have a thread there on Facebook, Twitter, Place Number 2B Nation, facebook.com/Place2B Nation. So hit us up any of those methods with any suggestions or questions or frivolities that you may have for us. So for Dan and Will, I'm JT. We'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks' time. Have a great 2 weeks.
Adios.
Pleasant.